1029 The Hog presents another Bob and Brian podcast.
This Bob and Brian podcast is brought to you by Marcus Theaters. Safety and well-being of guests and associates are top priority. Temporarily closing was the right thing to do, and when timing is right, the movie experience will return. Updates at MarcusTheaters.com.
It is Gary Graff time. Good morning, Gary. How are you?
All right. How are you guys?
Very good. You ready for Mother's Day?
I am.
But, are you giving Mom a record this year?
There is no Mom anymore, unfortunately. So you know, we'll be thinking about her.
All right. Then I'll steer
it
this
direction. Are they talking snow this weekend in your area?
Yes, snow flurries at least.
Yeah.
That's okay.
You know the way May, Mom liked it.
Yeah.
What the heck? It's May, you know?
It's one of the 9 months where we can get snow or have gotten snow.
Nine? What about 10?
Well, I think we've sort of decided June, July, and August it hasn't snowed.
I read something once that in Wisconsin, and it might just be the southeast corner of Wisconsin, that the only 3 months we have not received snow was June, July, and August. Other than that, we are, you know, we are, it's possible.
There have been flakes.
And I tell you what, I have been in northern Wisconsin in July where I thought it was going to snow sometimes.
I think it's much the same in Michigan.
Yeah.
I can't remember a June snow. I do remember May. In fact, even Memorial Day weekend. I remember at least bitter cold. If you're going
to
be this cold, snow already.
Yeah, but I remember snows in May, but I can't come up with June, July, or August. But all the other months, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
You know, this is what we get for being in the Great Lakes.
Yeah.
Still the most desirable place to be in the country.
There we go. That's right.
That is a positive attitude.
Well, it is, man. You know, when the oceans close in and all that other stuff in California.
I got to say.
You know, Florida fall into the sea, we're going to be right here in the middle, nice and happy.
I haven't had to run out of a forest fire, an earthquake, or a mudslide. Or, you know, wildfire.
Haven't seen too many hurricanes.
Right.
Yeah. Not even the remnants of hurricanes really worked their way this far north.
We get a heavy storm.
Right.
We get storms. Blizzards, tornadoes, a very occasional earthquake, and those aren't real big, you know.
I feel very manly and kind of stalwart after this.
Sure. You know? We've picked this part of the country to live in.
A strong, proud Midwesterner.
Hey, I know there's you don't have any concerts to go to, so you're probably well-rested on Friday mornings now, right?
More than usual.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, the first month of this, you figure out how exhausted you really are.
Well, we used to have you on a lot of Friday mornings where you were out until, you know, 2, 3, 4 in the morning at a Bob Seger show or somebody who was in Detroit, or you're on the phone with somebody, or you're calling from South by Southwest where you could barely speak. But I got to say, you've sounded good through all this COVID nonsense.
Well, thanks. I'm trying. It is interesting. I mean, it's different to wake up better rested in the morning.
So are you on the phone more now?
A little bit, you know, a little bit on the phone more. Actually, on EOL, I guess it counts as phone or computer, but, you know, whatever Zooming or Skyping we're all doing, a little bit more of that. And obviously consuming music online, you know, more, catching it on the computer, or we have a smart TV. So
this isn't in your notes, but Spotify's usage has to be up because all the streaming services are up because we have to find other things to entertain ourselves, right?
Right. Streaming services are up, YouTube, social media, all of that is up. Netflix is doing gangbusters. You know, as you'd expect, that's where everything is now, you know, from new movie openings, you know, because the theaters aren't open, to concert and music events.
Are bands hunkered down in the studios because they don't necessarily need to be in there together?
Right, yeah. So many of them have their home studios. You see things. For instance, this story will come out a little later today, but I spoke with Rita Wilson yesterday, you know, Tom Hanks' wife, and she's also a singer. She's releasing a new song today, you know, timed to Mother's Day weekend, and she told me the whole thing was done, you know, virtually. Each of the musicians, you know, what happens is, you know, the drummer lays down a track and he sends it to the producer, who then sends it to the, you know, to the guitarist, so on and so forth, and then she puts her vocals on top of it, and nobody has to see each other or be within the same country, much less 6 feet of each other.
But, you know, you could even without breaking a lot of taboos or regulations, get two or three musicians and an engineer together, right?
Oh, yeah, you know, you absolutely could. I mean, you have the issues, of course, surfaces and things like that, and has the place been cleaned and all that. This is actually, you know, it's done this way more often than not anymore, you know, in terms of even you know, before May 10th or 12th or whenever, or March 10th or 12th when all this started, this was the way most people recorded anyway, except that maybe, you know, you'd be in a control room together at some point listening. But remote recording's been going on for a few decades.
But the problem with not all being in the studio together is a lot of times they go in with an idea. They don't have the finished product in mind until it's actually finished, right?
Right. It becomes more of a producer's creation necessarily than the band. And
Genesis comes to mind.
There's still plenty of bands that go in there together, you know, and record, but there's a lot of remote recording that gets done, even before the virus.
Always been stories about, with the Beatles, they never saw each other for one album.
A few, I think, wasn't it?
Which one?
A few albums they didn't see each
other. Well, you know, the White Album, you know, they would come in dribs and drabs. Even Let It Be, which, by the way, is 50 years today, you know, to its release. As the Beatles' final album, it wasn't the final album they recorded, but it was the final one they released.
But it's not their best album, right?
I don't think so at all. Actually, you know, you can say that Abbey Road. You know, but what happened was in 1969 they made Let It Be as both album and film, and it was a wretched experience. Not as wretched as legend would have it, but, you know, the band was breaking up and they were unhappy with each other, so it was unpleasant. And then they decided that that's not how they wanted to go out, so they rallied and did Abbey Road, which was a much more positive experience. And then Abbey Road came out first and Let It Be followed.
All right, let's get to your list of things. That was just us riffing right there.
I want to start with Jack Osborne.
But we got a couple news items.
Okay, all right, go ahead.
No, we didn't.
Oh, okay. What about Jack Osborne?
Jack has been doing a little bit of press and social media stuff. You know, Howard Stern's looking for anybody these days to be on the air. But he gave us two news nuggets this week. One is that the family is talking about a revival of the Osbournes TV show that was on MTV. You know, he said conversations are coming up, you know. He thinks nostalgia is a big thing right now, especially with everyone hunkered down at home. So they're talking about doing that. Meanwhile, he also is working on a film about the early romantic relationship of his parents, of Ozzy and Sharon Osbourne, which is a really interesting story. You know, Sharon was the daughter of Black Sabbath and Ozzy's original manager, Don Arden. And then he kind of foisted, she wanted to get into the business, and he kind of foisted Ozzy on her while he was looking after Electric Light Orchestra and continuing to work with Black Sabbath, and she and Ozzy fell in love, and, you know, because he was such an attractive candidate back then. And, you know, say what you will, they're still married all these years later.
It's worked out for him.
I think it has ups and downs. Who doesn't have those? Theirs might be a little more dramatic and a little more public, but, you know, here they are. They're still together. It's about the longest rock and roll marriage I can think of. You know, Paul and Linda McCartney would probably still be together if she hadn't passed away, but this one's definitely a, you know, wonderful marriage.
Well, I'm trying to think of somebody.
And Jack's got a little bit of a story to tell, right? I mean, he's...
Yeah, Jack's gone through, you know, health issues, mental health issues as well. I mean, the idea of reviving the Osbournes TV show, that surprises me a little, because that's part of what contributed to both he and his sister Kelly's issues, you know, both with substances and mental health. So I guess they feel like they're in a better place now, you know, as older, as adults, as in his case, married and a father. You know, maybe to do the TV show again, whereas it just kind of steamrolled over them when they were kids.
Yeah, plus, I mean, less put on. I mean, there were things in the Osbournes where, you know, it was like, well, what crazy thing can you do this week, right? I mean, you know, throwing furniture over a fence or...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they were essentially like a goofier version of the Monsters.
With a better house. Much better house.
With a much nicer house.
What's this Michael Jackson, Quincy Jones lawsuit thing?
You know, what happened is, you know, Quincy Jones was Michael Jackson's primary producer for his biggest albums, Off the Wall, Thriller, and Bad. And, you know, what has happened over the years is the Michael Jackson estate has done some posthumous projects like the This Is It concert film and the Cirque du Soleil shows, and they've also renegotiated the royalty deal for Michael Jackson's catalog with the record company, and Quincy Jones kind of popped up and said, well, wait a minute, this is my work too, and I have a deal, I have a contract with you people, so he should, you know, Quincy should be enjoying the spoils. And
so he wants a percentage of what they're taking in on this stuff.
He wants the better percentage, right.
Right.
And for stuff like This Is It and Cirque du Soleil, he's like, no, I get some of that money too because I produce that music. So he won in the district court. He won a settlement of nearly $7 million, but the estate appealed, and then the federal district appellate court ruled in the estate's favor, saying that no, Quincy, you know, they don't have to pay that money to Quincy. He was handsomely rewarded. He's still being handsomely rewarded on his royalties. So, you know, he's going to appeal it, obviously. Potential for this to land in the Supreme Court.
So who sends out these checks? BMI, ASCAP? Who
the record company? They come from the record.
Okay, so it gets chopped up there, and their accountants figure it out.
Right. Yeah. So in this case, it's Sony Music, and you know they'll just Sony Music really doesn't have a stake in this. They'll just send the money wherever it's supposed to be sent.
Does Michael's estate still own Beatles?
Yeah.
McCartney
yeah,
stuff.
He still has that back. They don't own as much of it as he did back when he was alive. They cut a deal with, and I forget which publishing house they did, but they sold a stake of it to another publisher.
So Paul doesn't have it back yet. It's just more spread out now.
Right.
So he's probably still not satisfied, right?
No, I mean, he'd love to have it back, but at this point it's priced even beyond what Paul McCartney wants to pay for it. I mean, he might be able to afford it. You know, if he and Yoko Ono went in together, you know, they might be able to do it. But at this point, also, they're not selling. You know, the Jackson estate and the publisher who owns it, they're not interested in selling. Because would you?
No.
You know,
I don't know what.
It's a gold mine.
Right.
No, this stuff is a gold mine. You know, for licensing, for you know, every time you know a Beatle passes gas, they make money.
Boy, that would be a sweet deal.
You know what? If I owned Yellow Submarine or Act Naturally or a little help from my friends, I think I would sell those. Any Ringo song, I'd be willing to sell.
It's better having but keep in mind, if you sold those, then you wouldn't get as much of, you know, whatever of a Cirque du Soleil show or an online, you know, any sort of online thing.
The worst Beatles songs are worth a fortune.
Absolutely.
What song is most likely to be used to sell a cereal or a truck?
Yeah, and as a catalog, it's a gold mine.
Paperback writer.
I don't know.
Day tripper. Since we're on to the Beatles again, because they always come up, John Lennon's former Palm Beach mansion sold,
yeah.
but Yoko didn't own it, right?
At this point, no. I
mean, okay.
This is one they owned during the 70s, but it was a mansion they called El Solano. And they actually bought it for $750,000, and then sold it for $3.15 million in 1986. This week it sold for $47.5 million.
Nice.
And we don't know who bought it, but you know, clearly that's actually...
Does it look anything like it did when Lennon owned it, though?
Right, is it?
I think it's structurally, yes.
Okay,
you know,
so did he do anything there that's, like, famous? Here's the room where John Lennon wrote whatever.
Yeah, you know, that I don't know, because this was kind of a later, you know, I think, you know, most of the stuff he did, you know, in terms of the musical landscape, you know, his musical landmarks were New York and England, you know, but this is a place they enjoyed. And, you know, and lived in, so it's got some history to it. It's apparently right down the road from Mar-a-Lago.
All right, I swear this will right by Trump, huh?
Yeah, so, you know, that tells you what a nice neighborhood it is.
All right, this will be the last Beatle thing, I swear. So there's more, there's new auction items. So they got some McCartney and Ringo stuff in there?
Yeah,
along with Prince?
Well, one of the things, there's a number of cool auction things happening right now, but one of the interesting things that's going up for sale is an unreleased demo tape of a song called Where did I put the title? Angel in Disguise. This is the only time Paul McCartney and Ringo Starr ever wrote a song together. I was originally for a Ringo album, Time Takes Time, that was back in 1982.
I'll bet that was torture for Paul. I can do this faster on my own. You're slowing me down, Ringo.
Possibly. Possibly. But, you know, never made it on an album, but it's existed. The demos existed on this cassette that, you know, has been owned by a former Radio Luxembourg DJ. And now he's putting it up for auction.
Wow.
And then there's another memorabilia auction coming up by Cheshire that's going to have some Prince material, you know, so a collection of Prince memorabilia, and McCartney Beatles lyrics, original lyric sheet that has things crossed out and written in and corrected. So that'd be fun. I think Maxwell Silver Hammer is one of them.
Back to Abbey Road.
It doesn't say this is crap over the top at her. Just has other corrections and a whole bunch of stuff from Madonna, Michael Jackson, Whitney Houston, Johnny Cash, Rolling Stones, Queen, David Bowie. This is a good auction.
When they finally get around to having Britney Spears' next conservatorship hearing, are they going to let her be, or?
I don't know. This is interesting. Britney Spears, she's due for, they have them every year. They have a hearing about her conservatorship. This year's has been delayed, however, until August. It was supposed to happen, I believe, this month. Now it's been delayed to August because of the COVID-19 issue and the courts. You know, the courts are backed up and they're doing most things, you know, online now. You know, you have a Zoom hearing. So August 22nd is the next date for Britney and her conservatorship hearing. You know, it's no longer her dad. He bowed out.
Right. Does she want out of that setup, or is she, you know, understand?
He has some health issues. So she, you know, the current conservator is a woman named Jody Montgomery, and she was kind of court appointed with approval from both sides. And so, you know, and then it's going to go in front of the judge in August, you know, should Britney remain in conservatorship or not. I mean, obviously, I think she's nearing 30, if she's not 30 already. So maybe she should have her
Britney,
life.
Britney's almost 40.
Like 40.
I think Britney's 39.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right, Britney's nearly 40 now.
So she's an adult now, and, you know, she is a mother. And,
right.
You know. And
she,
you
does
know,
well with some, well, a great amount of supervision.
When you put the bumpers in the gutters so she can't get in there, she does okay.
Right. Well, that's the argument.
Yeah. Right. But when you let her out of the corral,
yeah,
I mean,
not when she.
So I don't know. You know, is she ready to handle all this now? That's obviously for the court to decide. But we'll see. I mean,
what does she want?
What does who want?
Britney Spears.
Oh, she wants to not have a conservator.
Okay.
She wants to live like you, me, and Gary, where, you know, if she wants to hop in the car and go to Dairy Queen, she can do it.
Is that conservatory?
Yeah, if we want to light our gyms on fire.
Because there's that.
You're not helping, Gary. I doubt that they'll be
a valet deal. Do you get a valet with that? I don't know.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing. So we'll see. You know, we'll see what happens. I mean, you would think it's time, but you know the other side of that coin, like you said, is it pulled her out of a really bad abyss, and it's been working.
Yeah right. Exactly.
Yeah, if it works, don't fix
it. But then, how long do you keep it going? I mean, do you wait till the kids are 18?
I don't know. I honestly, Gary, I don't want to see her running around shaving her head, swinging umbrellas again. We've done that. I felt horrible for her because she was a kid who just didn't know how to live on her own.
Maybe
right.
She just needs
exactly.
This.
She was thrown into something she had no.
Yeah.
Well, so say they let her out and she runs around for a while.
Yeah.
Even if she does okay, at some point when you get old, you need someone to look after you. So I say, just, you know, just have someone watch her.
From a distance, you're saying? Like,
it doesn't have to be. You can change the title. Hey, I'm Britney Spears' bodyguard, you know.
Like maybe
a dedicated drone to follow Britney around.
or maybe just somebody who, when she's at 7-Eleven, getting a big gulp, you know, and she wants to buy something else, there's just somebody standing behind her going, no, bad idea. Just shaking their head that the clerk is looking at, something like that.
Yeah.
We're getting late here, Gary. What's the deal with Christopher Cross?
Christopher Cross, you know, he had COVID-19 and came out of it in bad shape, and so he's sharing just some of it. I mean, he's partly paralyzed now.
Holy cow!
Because of it, he has an onset of Guillain-Barr syndrome. He's in a wheelchair right now, but he's going through physical therapy, and you know he's at least saying positive things and thanking you know fans and listeners for their support and well wishes. But sounds like he came through it pretty rough.
Yeah, and we don't know what the long term prognosis is, or they don't even know what the long term.
No, they're working through it. You know, the Guillain-Barr, you know, is its own kind of issue. So we'll see how he gets through that. And before we leave, we should also make note that Bob Dylan has just announced his first new album in 8 years, Rough and Ready. It's going to be out June 19th. That 17-minute song he just had out, Murder Most Foul, is going to be part of it. And we'll be hearing some other new songs before it's released in June.
Did you watch Robbie Robertson on the big interview this week?
I haven't yet.
It was more interesting than I thought.
I talked to him last fall when the movie was coming out in the festival.
Yeah. Once We're Brothers is the documentary, right?
Right, it's the band.
About the band, yeah. I thought he said something interesting. He was asked if he had any regrets, and he said, yeah, I would love to have done one more album. But then he said, but who wouldn't? You know, one more album with those guys.
Good way to push it. Obviously, one of his regrets is not kind of, stealing the narrative of the band from the other guys. You know, there's Robbie's story, and then, probably all five of them would have their own story, but Robbie has been able to make his the seemingly the official story of the band.
Well, according to him, he and Levon Helm patch things up there at the end.
That's what he said.
That's what he says, but I've never...
That's not what Levon's family says.
Right.
Really?
So, yeah. It's, Robbie's been accused for years of stealing all the money, stealing all the credit, controlling the narrative, blah, blah, blah.
Did Robbie pop up in any movies like Levon did?
He's been in a couple. You know, Robbie is Martin Scorsese's go-to.
He scores all the Scorsese movies. Yeah, I didn't know that.
He's had bit part, or not even parts. You know, he's been the Stan Lee of the Martin Scorsese movies. Right. But, you know, he's done the music for all of them.
Yeah, which I thought, I learned that too. So anyway, it's a good interview. Check it out.
Oh, yeah. No, Robbie is a good interview.
All right. Gary, we're out of time.
Have a great week. Stay safe.
All right, you too. Wash your hands. We'll talk to you next week.
Okay.
Gary Graff, our music guy.